On Friday, September 10th, two Jamaican migrant agricultural workers died as a result of injuries suffered at Filsinger Farms near Owen Sound, Ontario. The Ministry of Labour has not made the details of the accident public, but the Jamaican government is reporting that Raistin White and Paul Roach may have died from the inhalation of toxic fumes. Justicia for Migrant Workers, a migrant worker advocacy collective, is calling on the provincial government to do more to protect people who come to Canada through the Temporary Foreign Worker Program. Sazna Miranda Leal is an organizer with the Toronto contingent of Justicia for Migrant Workers. She's on the phone with me this evening from Toronto. Hi, Sazna.
Hi, how are you?
Great. What are the latest details of the most recent tragedy that has happened to people working under Canada's Temporary Foreign Worker Program?
Well, unfortunately, those two migrant farm workers from Jamaica passed away from a workplace accident. They were pumping out apple cider, and the pump broke. It got some pieces of apple or something got stuck in it, and they tried fixing it manually, and so they went into the chamber that they were pumping, and so they ran out of oxygen. So they passed away, and these are not the first migrant workers that are part of the program that have passed away. It happens very often, and Justicia has always tried to be there in the community and help out the families. So this time we are demanding that the Ministry of Labour make changes to the program, and we're also demanding that there's a coroner's inquest started about the deaths, which rarely happens or never happens. Their employers are not required to be involved in one.
These two men, they were working under the Seasonal Agricultural Workers Program, and
right.
So they were working in an apple farm?
Yeah, it was an organic farm where they make apple cider, apple butter, that kind of thing.
How has the Ontario government responded at all? Have they done anything to...
The Ontario government hasn't responded at all. We held a rally Friday 2 weeks ago in front of the Ministry of Labour on Dundas and University, downtown Toronto, demanding that the coroner's inquest be started, and we... as a visual, but some bloody apples to give to the minister, and then we tried to give it to them, and his guards were very adamant about not letting us in, so he didn't even see us. I mean, technically, anybody can go see the minister, but I guess not us.
And I heard that you tried to get in, but they stopped.
They shut down the elevators, yeah, and they threatened with arresting us, the police did, which is really sad because they show up, you know, to deal with a community group when really they should be doing a coroner's inquest about this farm and why people, you know, trying to find out why people are dying in this workplace. Farm workers are dying.
Yes, I read on your website, justiciaformigrantworkers.org, that Justicia for Migrant Workers is pressing the Ontario government for snap inspections and criminal investigation in these cases, in addition to the coroner's inquest. And you've mentioned that historically this has never happened. Why is this so?
Well, in general, we think there's an incorrect approach to this situation. The reason why we're asking for snap inspections is that workplaces are sometimes or generally inspected for health and safety purposes before everybody comes, before farm workers come from the Caribbean and from Mexico. But then they're never inspected, or they're very rarely inspected while people are working there, which, you know, is very different when people are living there and people are working there. So that's why snap inspections are important. Many times conditions develop in the workplace that are very dangerous, and they're not caught by inspectors. So we want health and safety standards to be enforced. The second problem is that usually the blame gets put on the worker. In this case, for example, there were a few articles that were put out by several newspapers where the owner of the farm was quoted saying they knew not, you know, the farm workers knew not to go in there, but they went in anyway. So that clearly shows a paternalistic attitude towards them. It sounds like they're speaking about children. You know, I told them not to go in there, but they did it anyway. Clearly, they didn't know they could die. they were grown men. If they had known, they wouldn't have gone in there. So there's this problem by this attitude by the community and by the government that when there's an accident in the workplace, it's the worker's fault, when really it is up to the employer to provide proper training and proper safety measures, right?
From what you know, what are some of the other things that are creating a very dangerous work environment and causing these injuries and deaths for the migrant workers?
In this case, this was a rare case because it was an apple cider farm. But for example, well, starting from the most basic, which is the actual work, backbreaking work, literally. It's repetitive work that requires people to bend down really low for many, many hours every day, you know, for months and on. It's very, very heavy on your joints, on your back, on your knees if you're bending down all day. Sometimes they need to go from hot to cold, from hot back again, and so people's bodies, you know, have to take a lot of strain. But also, on top of that, there's pesticides in many, many workplaces. This one was an organic farm, so it didn't have pesticides, but many others do, and we see it all the time. There's no equipment or very inadequate equipment provided for farm workers. And bad training or no training or training in languages that aren't their own. So it's basically useless. So that's another thing, pesticides and the training related to that. Training also connects to machinery, and machinery that's dangerous to use. If people aren't properly trained to do it, they might have serious accidents, which has happened before a lot with tractors, with machines for mushroom farms, for example, is one that I can think of that's really dangerous. And then it's all sorts of different things related to working in a factory, in a greenhouse, right?
Mm-hmm. We're talking right now about people working under the seasonal agricultural worker program, specifically one of the temporary foreign worker programs in Canada. And Justicia for Migrant Workers has criticized the temporary foreign worker program in Canada. So connecting with the explaining the dangerous aspects of the working conditions, what are the stipulations of the program that make working under it dehumanizing, particularly in the seasonal agricultural workers program? Because I know Justicia primarily works with people working under the seasonal agricultural workers program.
Mm-hmm. Well, Justicia is actually, yes, historically we work with the SOP, meaning the seasonal agricultural workers program, but also right now, we're organizing with many people from the temporary foreign worker programs, coming from Thailand and the Philippines mainly. But there's people from many, many other countries. I think a similarity that exists between the two is the disproportionate amount of control and power given to the employer through the structure of the program. So let me explain what I mean is, an employer is giving full responsibility over the training and over the housing of the SOP workers, and with almost no supervision from anybody, right? So it's not that people are inherently bad. It's that when you have a program that is set to give certain people this disproportionate amount of control and power over another group of people, and then you add in, you know, the racialization of labor, it's disastrous, right? So workers are denied the access to services and systematically denied the access to services, and employers are systematically given power to repatriate people, to fire people, to force people to work under dangerous conditions. And so the way the program is set up, people are very vulnerable, and people are denied access to their rights and to the services that they deserve. And that's why we think the structure of the program itself is what makes these dangerous conditions even more dangerous, and what makes people stick in these workplaces and stay there and endure these harsh conditions.
I was listening to an interview that you had done with Red Eye Co-op Radio earlier, and I was wondering what you meant by the SOP program being gendered and racialized. So in what ways is the work under the SOP gendered and racialized?
To start with, we have to look at history and realize that it is the same bodies that were exploited in the past through colonial processes that are exploited now through neoliberal systems. It is a very racialized workforce coming from Latin America and the Caribbean. The SAL program is set up so that workers come from a very specific background, from a very specific socioeconomic group, with very specific skills and schooling. So there's a very there's a power dynamic that goes on when you have a highly racialized workforce coming up that has also been hit by colonial abuse in the past, right, and oppression. So Caribbean workers come to Canada and relate these experiences to slavery, and they tell us every day, we thought slavery was over, and we see that this is our history repeating. And Mexican workers see it differently. They see the colony as well. I mean, slavery was a little different in Mexico, but so they say, this is slave work, and we see our history repeating over and over and over, right? That's what I mean by a racialized workforce. And gendered, well, it's very interesting. There are women that come through the SALP, and they get put in very gender-specific roles in the workplace. They're made, you know, they are generally hired to pack flowers and pack fruit and do things that are allegedly more for women, that require more dexterous hands. And in the workplace, it's very, very obvious how the workplace is divided. The workforce is divided in men and women are treated very differently. They often have curfews, and they have limits about who they can see and what time they can go out, who they can go out with, how they can express their sexuality or not express their sexuality. Sexual health is often a problem. And so they suffer from a whole other layer of problems on top of the racialization of labor for being women.
What are some of the common reasons as to why people feel the need to work under these programs?
Well, it's very simple. There's very high rates of unemployment in Mexico, but also they're promised ideal jobs in Canada, right? They're promised lots of money, great working conditions, you know, fair wages, a contract that seems very reasonable, but later on they realize it's breached very often. Also, there's this notion in Mexico and in the Caribbean that Canada is a humanitarian nation where things are very just and equitable, and that it's, you know, like the American dream, but the Canadian dream. And so people come and sadly realize that it's not like that, and what they were expecting is not here, but still they are pushed to work these jobs because it's the only way that they can provide for the family.
And people working under the Temporary Foreign Worker Program, including the SOP, they're not allowed to stay in Canada permanently. So how long are they allowed to stay here?
It depends. The Seasonal Agricultural Worker Program is very season-based, right? So people come from anywhere from 5 weeks to 8 months, depending on the crop, depending on the job that they got. And they come and they have to leave immediately after their contract system. Usually, I guess they could stay because they have a work permit valid until a certain date. But again, it's employers that have the power over that. Employers buy the ticket, employers put them in a cab, or, you know, have their driver take them to the airport and put them on a plane. So employers also have powers over when people can go home and when they can't. And through the Temporary Foreign Worker Program, people generally have 2-year work permits. And sometimes they can renew them, and sometimes they have to go home and process a new one.
Do you know how many people come to Canada under the Temporary Foreign Worker Program or the SOP program every year? And from where?
The SOP program brings more than 18,000 people. And in general, temporary foreign workers add up anywhere from 320,000 to sometimes 400,000, depending on which industries you count and several details like that. The SAL brings people from Mexico, Jamaica, Barbados, sometimes Grenada, San Vicente, Trinidad and Tobago, and other countries in the Caribbean, the Commonwealth. And then the Temporary Foreign Worker Program I'm pretty sure I don't know every single country that they bring people from, because I keep hearing of new countries that are in the temporary foreign worker program now. So that I know of is Philippines, Thailand, Guatemala, Colombia, Sri Lanka, Mexico. That's all I can think of right now, but I know there's more.
Last week I read on your website, Justicia 4, and that's the number 4, migrantworkers.org, that there is a pilgrimage or march being organized by Justicia for Migrant Workers during this coming Thanksgiving weekend, so this weekend. Why is this march being organized?
This pilgrimage is being organized by workers and by Justicia. It's being co-organized with a group of temporary foreign workers based in southern Ontario. And we are going to be walking from Leamington to Windsor, so that's approximately 50 kilometers, 12 hours or so, to bring attention to all the issues that temporary foreign workers face, from agents, fees, sexism and racism, health and safety, just to bring attention to migrant workers' issues on Thanksgiving particularly, because Thanksgiving is a holiday based on agriculture, right? It's a day when you thank, you give thanks for your food and for the harvest, and we think it's ironic that in an area that is so heavily dependent on agriculture, nobody really thanks the people that harvest the food, that grow it, that process it, that pack it, right? So we want to send that message out. Every single product that was made in Ontario that you're going to be eating on Thanksgiving is likely, in some way or another, produced or grown by migrant workers. And you should know what the issues are related to this huge workforce.
Mm-hmm. Please share with listeners the details about the pilgrimage, Sasna.
Mm-hmm. So we'll be leaving at 7 a.m., downtown Leamington. You can see more details on our website. We'll go to the Tower of Freedom Monument in Windsor, and we'll stop in Essex in the Mills for a rally with some speakers and some press, hopefully. So check out our website for sure, but if you want more details and if you want to register for the march, send us an email to pilgrimage to freedom. So that's pilgrimage to, as in the number 2, freedom at gmail.com, and we can send out some stuff from there.
Well, Justicia for Migrant Workers work, there's not enough of it, and it is appreciated so much. Thank you for speaking with me this evening, Sasna. I just think it's
You're
really
welcome,
important.
Mary. Thank you for having me.
I've been speaking with Sasna Miranda Leal. She is an organizer with the grassroots migrant justice organization, Justicia for Migrant Workers. You can visit their website, which is Justicia 4, that's with the number 4, migrantworkers.org, or you can search for their site by keying in Justice for Migrant Workers, Ontario.